The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Weekend editions here. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal. We're going to be joined by Mark Kranak here shortly. And a week from today, hey, we'll have a week of spring football in. A lot of question marks and thoughts to get rolling. Some comments by Marcus Satterfield to sift through some spring goals if you're Nebraska, and some players to watch. You're welcome to join us as we're doing a new Saturday adventure. Same, jerks, but different format as we are streaming live here on YouTube and, of course, the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Can find us and watch us that way on Twitter and at HVarsity Radio, and then KFOR Facebook, KFOR Twitter are the ways to do it. Mark Kranak with us in a bit. Brandon Vogel here in about 15 minutes, and then the Iron Horse to grab us about 8:30 or so. How was St. Patrick's Day, Elijah? Did you get after it? Did you get some corned beef? I know you absorbed a lot of basketball, as did I. Had a good show yesterday. And then we got rolling with the evening festivities. A little bit of Guinness, not too much. Early to bed by choice, not by force. And well rested for today. But NCAA tournament's been beautiful. It's been incredible, unpredictable. And ready to do it all over again this morning.
Yeah, I can't say I did anything very exciting on my St. Patrick's Day. I stayed home and watched a 16 seed take down a 1 seed. That's about as exciting as it gets, so can't complain about that, I guess. But, yeah, other than that, just kind of sat on my couch, watched some basketball. I'm supposed to be going on a walk to Eagle, Nebraska following this show. Which is
so you're walking from the station to Eagle
From my house, which is like a mile and a half up the road. So it's still going to be a bit of a journey today. So I had to make sure I was in good shape on a Saturday morning.
You're really going, for folks who know Lincoln or are catching us from around wherever you're watching us. You live right around 70th and.
So
we'll say Fremont area.
Yeah, kind of by the Lancaster County Event Center. So we're going to walk over that bridge between the Lancaster County Event Center and the Walmart, and then we're going to go down 84th Street all the way down to the Mopac Trail, and then we're going to walk up to Eagle and hopefully stop by a bar in Eagle afterwards. Maybe that's when the St. Patrick's Day celebrations will happen, but that's coming up following the show. I got my pre-workout with me. I'm all set to go, so we'll see how that goes. It's going to be a chilly one today.
Your pre-workout looks a lot like the lemonade or the Crystal Light, which is good.
It pretty much is. It's a pink lemonade flavored pre-workout.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It's what it looks like. So spring football on our mind for Nebraska. But before we get there, how embarrassed are you as a Big Ten fan right now? Not only with just the league that continues to flame out for basketball, but now you're a second name on that list from a conference standpoint of 16 seed, 1 seed debacle. It's been kind of fun to point and laugh at Virginia all these years. All right. But now it's Purdue. Now it's Purdue, and they looked horrible. Purdue's looked horrible in a lot of February ball games into March. And Purdue's looked horrible with an All-American at 7'4" that may or may not be an NBA prospect. Like, he'll get a look because he's 7'4". Edie's a good ball player. But quite honestly, basketball's changed so much with positionless basketball. If you're going to be 7 foot something anymore. You better be able to handle the ball and shoot the three. And he can't.
Well,
and he was a liability defensively last night.
That's what I was going to say is the 7'3" is great and all, but there was a great, great defensive game plan from Fairleigh Dickinson where they're doubling down, not just on the catch on post-up opportunities. It felt like they were doubling down on him and putting two bodies on him in rebounding situations where, yeah, he'd grab the ball, but then there'd be two guys there to knock it away from him, and now Fairleigh Dickinson comes up with it. It was a great, great game plan from the Knights, so let's give them a little bit of credit where credit is due. Like, first off, yeah, Zach Edey's probably going to be kicking himself about that game, but great job by Fairleigh Dickinson to have a game plan coming into that. I mean, they're the shortest team in the country. The shortest
produced
team in the country.
The biggest.
Not the shortest team in the tournament. They're the shortest team in the country. Yet they're going out there and they found a game plan for Zach Edey. Like most of the Big Ten was unable to do so. And they're advancing on to the round of 32. That was one of the most incredible upsets. And I said it to my roommate at the time. I'll say it again. I mean, they're outside the top 300 in the KenPom metric. Fairleigh Dickinson is. That is the worst loss, in my opinion, in NCAA history. You're the number one overall seed, and you lost to a team that was statistically this year the 300th best team in the country. And oh, guess what? They didn't even win their conference. They got the auto bid because Merrimack wasn't eligible for the NCAA tournament yet, who won the conference tourney, so then they get the bid. They weren't even supposed to be there. Like, how Do the Boilermakers lose that basketball game? That's the worst loss I have ever seen in my lifetime. I'd argue worse than NCAA history.
I don't think you're off. And you got called out. Their coach, who was coaching Division III a year ago, called his shot on the play-in game. We won Purdue. Yeah. It's like they want Bama, right? We were opening up, Kranek, about embarrassment level for the Big Ten. It's been embarrassing in the Big Ten that you've gone 20 years without a national champion. You're going to have this, oh, we're the Big Ten, and you get 8 to 10 teams, it feels like, in every year in March. Nobody gets to the Sweet 16, not nobody, but you'll have 10, you have 8 or 9 candidates, and one or two will be left standing after the first weekend. And now you're on that bathroom wall list of teams that are one seeds to fall to a 16 seed. I mean, it just, I don't know. The Big Ten is rugged. It's good. It's going to flex on itself about how we beat each other up and we're the basketball conference. Meanwhile, the Big 12 is like, yeah, I know we weren't perfect, but we're going to be looking real good come March. Just different priorities, different philosophies, and Purdue's a bit of a joke. Not to take away Nebraska's effort against them, okay? But you got to think there's a lot of Fred Hoiberg film that may have been watched in short order, in short turnaround time by Fairleigh Dickinson and some of the other schools that did knock off Purdue. But for them to lose is inexcusable, and it shows as much when somebody took out a giant chunk that looked like the state of New Jersey from the whiteboard in the locker room last night.
Well, what was the best thing to be, Mark, while you catch yourself is the fact that I was sitting at home and rooting against my own bracket. Like, I had Purdue going pretty far, and I'm going to rip that up, and I'm going to root for the Cinderella. That was just incredible to watch, and Mark, I'll let you jump in now.
No, it's a few things there. And who did they lose to last year?
St. Peter's, the 15 seed.
Right? So I don't know how much I want to put this on the Big Ten and maybe put on Matt Painter. You know, I think he's a very good coach. He's respectable. He's respected. I think he's probably the most, I don't know, humble and complimentary coach that there probably is in the Big Ten. Every time Nebraska plays him, he just makes you feel good about Nebraska's lot in life, right? Like that, he's just he's a friendly dude, runs a clean program. 2 years in a row, he did not have his squad ready to compete with, quite honestly, and this sounds terrible, vastly inferior opponents. Look, your job is to make sure those kids are ready to play. he has failed at that badly. 2 years in a row, St. Peter's, and then now these guys, right? And you have a 7'3" center that actually knows how to play the sport. You know, and weren't you struck by too just how much Fairleigh Dickinson was that, like, straight up ready to play?
They didn't look like they were outside of the Big Ten. They looked like a Big Ten team last night.
They were jacked. They were ready to go. That dude, you see at the end of the game when that little 5 foot whatever guy blocked a shot and then headbutted the base of the backboard? Those dudes were like, I don't know if they were given methamphetamines before the game or what, but they were ready to roll. Like, they were just crazy energetic. Purdue, no, they were tight. They were tight. They weren't aggressive. That message, that tone starts at the top. Mm-hmm. And so there's something that Matt Painter needs to examine himself. You know, I guess it's easy to do an indictment on the Big Ten, which, well, Big Ten basketball is Big Ten football, isn't it? I mean, it's what's the difference, right? It's just sort of like you maybe don't have as many explosive athletes.
Difference is if somebody's at least in the playoff, which I would equate to the Final Four. Right. Fair. And you're not really getting that consistently. It's not that you're not getting it, but it's not an every year thing. You at least have somebody in the playoff. But your point is fine. Absolutely. I mean, what's the difference between Purdue and Michigan getting turnover happy against TCU?
I know. I'm just saying they're so similar. The styles anyways. Yeah. Big, plotting. You know, and maybe you have a couple guys that are, and so, you know, Fred tried to go counter to that. He tried to make the Big Ten change their system for him. It didn't work first couple years.
Wow, you know, this morning. I love it.
You know, he went all quick, and he went athletic. He went, you know, it didn't fly. It couldn't last a second in the Big Ten. So there is something to, like, the style you have to play in the Big Ten just to survive to get to the tournament. But man, once you're there, you can't be puckered up. That's where, I mean, Purdue was like, did they look like they were having fun yesterday?
They looked annoyed that they had to be out there and, all right, we're Purdue, yield to us. We're going to come out here and just squash you like a bug. No, they weren't.
Did you see joy? Did you see passion?
Well, you saw the last 5 minutes of the game. Nobody wanted to shoot the basketball. What was the stat? Zach Edey had one field goal attempted in the last 10 minutes of that game or something crazy. Nobody wanted to try to shoot a three in the last 5 minutes of that game. You had an airballed three during that time. That entire Purdue team felt the pressure, and you could see it. You could see them crumbling to the pressure before your eyes whenever you got guys that all season long have not been hesitant to shoot a three. That's what's been so great about that Purdue team is they have shooters all around the floor, and then, oh, guess what? You got to crash down on Zach Edey, opens up a three-point shooter. They're going to knock it down. Last night, it was Zach Edey getting crashed down on, and then nobody on the outside wanted to shoot a shot. Purdue felt the pressure, and you could see that self-doubt creep in as that game went further and further along, and by the end, it was Purdue beating themselves.
Yeah. It's not an all emotional game. You have to know how to regulate them and keep them in check. Obviously. I wonder if maybe that's what Matt is, what Coach Painter is maybe overemphasizing. Hey guys, just stay within yourselves. Let the game come to you. We don't need to play like, you know, just need to play like we played all year. We don't need to get too excited. We don't need, right? Because you didn't see a lot of celebrating with their teammates. You know, like, if you think back to that, do you remember somebody making a big shot and then everybody rallying around and, you know, doing, which is relatively new in the last 5 years, where you just look into the sky and just scream as loud as you can? Did you see Purdue do any of that? No, they didn't do any of that. I don't know. They were flat and
big time. Good call.
Yeah. It's a damn shame because now the bracket was perfect before that. You know, it was one of the 20,000 people nationwide that had a perfect bracket before that one. That is not true. That is not true. Yeah. Let's do bracket talk. It's about as interesting as talking about our fantasy football teams, isn't it? How's your bracket? It's terrible. What do you have to think? It's terrible.
It's awful. Set it on fire. Move on. Right. So let's get into some spring football. Brandon Vogel is going to be with us in about 5 minutes, and we'll get Vogue's take on this. I haven't seen all of it. I plan to watch some of it this weekend. But yeah, Trevor.
Sorry. I thought you were talking about spring football or something. I was like, wait, what?
No. Spring football.
Did it start?
No, it starts on Monday at 6 a.m. And we'll be all giddy for that. But you have T.O., Trev, and Rule all suited up.
Yeah.
Sitting around a table, the round table. I want to go there for a little bit. And I haven't watched all of it, but I've gotten a few of the important points, specifically just the discussion point of how important practice is and how important being physical is, right? Those are two things that they start the conversation off with Rule and T.O. and Trev. And Trev's, I mean, just super comfortable in that setting. You forget he didn't anchor, but he was a major analyst with ESPN for a lot of years.
He did anchor for CNNSI.
So he was an anchor. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's really talented at the broadcast part of things, as well as running a college football program and having foresight in a conference like the Big Ten. So I thought that was pretty remarkable. And the one thing you want is unity. You want a lot of things, but unity is so important. And I don't know that you've had unity with the Osborne factor. And I call it the Osborne factor because whether you want his input or not as a coach, you need to take it. Just what do you think? what do you think?
Take your medicine.
That's
hilarious.
It's true. To have everything on the same page. You can have your own philosophy. You can have your own theory. But Coach Rule's gone out of his way for the involvement part of this. He seeked out Osborne. And I hate to compare it to The Godfather, where you're in there to pay your respects to Don Corleone. That's almost...
It's immediately what I thought of, to be honest.
It's what it feels like, and good. Good for Rule getting it. Good for Rule being sincere about it, and good for T.O. being willing to, okay, this is not Scott. This is not Scott. This is not the guy I wanted. I'm upset or saddened that Scott Frost didn't work out. This is the guy that's replacing him, Trev. You got rid of Scott. I mean, think of the politics here that we could go down that road of, all right, you got rid of my guy.
Well, listen.
It had to be done. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And T.O. did that.
I think so. Yeah. But initially, though,
was another one of his guys.
Sure. But initially, Tom didn't want to do anything with the Rule press conference. Think of that. Coach Osborne was contacted by the World Herald, and hey, are you going to be at the Rule press conference? And Tom's like, no, I have an appointment that day. Well, ever since that moment, Nebraska's really kind of amped up their footage of Tom and Rule together, which is fine with me, you know. And it looks like it's working out. But Kranach, did you see much of it? The round table.
Yeah,
the topic of physicality and of course practice. We bring in Brandon Vogel with us. And Vogues, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Good. What's up, Brandon? Purdue bashing for a little bit.
It's really easy. Why not? Easy to do. It's just like, hey, you were number one and you lost to number 300. You suck. You suck. You know. No, we're talking about T.O. and Trev and Matt Rule and their little sit down that they had that the Huskers put out. Few things struck me there. So it was also different where T.O. can't be too upset about letting Frost go, because by T.O.'s own metrics of why he let Callahan go, that he said out loud, so yeah, if you can get to this many wins, we can probably make it work. If you get this many, if you can't get to there, I don't think this is going to work. Well, Frost didn't get there like 4 years in a row. So, you know, I think he understood why he had to go. Any takeaways from that one, Brandon, other than sort of the – it seems like T.O. respects Matt Rule's approach, and he's going to kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, I actually haven't had a chance to watch the entire video yet, but what you just shared sends me back to the day that Callahan was fired. And I remember it vividly because that piece of it stuck out to me. You know, I think we found out, well, maybe it had come out shortly before that, but it really surprised me that Coach Osborne, AD Osborne at the time, had laid out such specific parameters. And, you know, it makes me wonder I was surprised again when we kind of had it with Frost, made me wonder if Trev, speaking to Osborne, got a recommendation to go that way. And I mean, if you're a coach, like it makes sense, or really at any walk of life, just like knowing what you need to do and knowing what you need to hit is fair enough. And you either get there or you don't, and didn't get there. And now Osborne, Alberts, and Rule are sitting down together and creating social media content.
Brandon, do you think that the Tom Osborne factor is needed in order to win over Husker Nation now in 2023? It's almost felt like something that's been a box you have to check as a Husker football coach. Yes, you need the blessing of Tom Osborne. He needs some sort of influence over the program. At least in my lifetime, it feels like that's been a requirement for Husker coaching. I want to know, is that a requirement? Is that necessary? Or is this icing on the cake now that we've reached 2023, the fact that Tom Osborne seems to have a good relationship with Matt Rule?
Yeah, I think it's something that people still want to see. And you know, when you stop and think about it, like Coach Osborne's probably one of the most fair people you'll come across. Like, he's going to be in the corner of, you know, whoever Nebraska hires. So it's a little bit of show business, I think, each time, but I do think it's still important. And, you know, I don't know, this is just my opinion. I look at Rule, and what we know of Coach Osborne, they do seem like people who would mesh, would find some common ground. So I'm guessing that's actually the case here, but I do think it still matters to Husker fans.
Brandon Vogel with us, managing editor at Hail Varsity Weekend, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. So I think you're right on about the mesh part of T.O. and Rule, and I think it's important for the perception and the PR side, for everybody to be holding hands. Okay, you mean the unity part's big. And I think it really shows some humility as well by Rule to be so willing to, I don't want to say showcase, that sounds a little bit invasive.
He kisses the ring and he understands why he should.
Right, which is cool. I think he's doing it because he truly thinks Coach Osborne's an incredible coach. He's not doing it so he's got another year if he goes 3-9. And I think that the reason's genuine. Vogues, why do you think so many coaches were, I don't want to say grumbling, but there may have been an eye roll or two in the past, and there's several choices. Like, it's funny. You have Callahan and T.O., right? And part of that wasn't fair about Bill coming in, not knowing
crusty
what Nebraska
old,
was.
Yeah. Crusty old, yeah.
You have Riley letting out that, well, Tom wants to come to practice. Well, that pissed off T.O., allegedly. That was Riley. You have Bo there dragging T.O. out to run out of the tunnel, and that was as a tribute. Thanks for what you've done. He grabs his arm. He's like, raise your hand, man, you know, against Minnesota. And then there's the Scott factor, where just, you know, a year before Osborne's or Scott lands in Lincoln, I mean, T.O.'s down speaking in front of the team at Central Florida. So he always needs to be a part of this. I think there's a lot of Nebraska fans that feel that way. There's some Nebraska fans that are ready to, hey, thanks for everything, man, but stay over there. But good for Rule in his comfort level. It's not always been that way with coaches.
Yeah, it hasn't. And I mean, I think that's mostly a reflection of Nebraska's fate on the field. And, you know, Pelini kind of threw, I mean, Pelini had success. He had very consistent success. And that one maybe doesn't fit the narrative, I guess. But when you look at those other three, like, I think about Oklahoma, Bob Stoops. Like, Stoops and Switzer had a great relationship. Maybe that would have been the case no matter what happened. But it sure the heck helped make that just, okay, well, Switzer was great. He can just be over there, be our program legend. And Bob Stoops, meanwhile, is winning national titles at Oklahoma. Nebraska didn't have that. So you kind of, as you go through and you end up every 4 or 5 years having to fire another coach, the specter of Tom Osborne and what he built looms large, because you're kind of watching it, or who knows, you're at least worrying that, well, is that eroding? Can it come back? So I think that contributes a little bit to just that tension. Because if you go out and, you know, do what Stoops did in year two and win one on your own, then all of a sudden, like, you can just be like, yeah, I love having Coach Switzer here. I bounce things off him all the time, and we have our own ideas, and look, they've worked.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up, Elijah. Like, it's got to be different from your perspective where you weren't alive when T.O. was doing his thing. It's still very fresh in other, you know, I know it was the mid-90s. It was a long time ago, but you can vividly remember the names, the faces, the feelings, all of it, right? So it's interesting, that perspective, and I would understand it. I think it's just more about, like, it helps you with the behind the scenes. It helps you with kind of the Husker Illuminati. Like, the same people that are donating to teammates are the same ones that are, you know, keeping the program alive. Right. So it's good to have that unity behind the scenes. You just don't. Is it a requirement to win national titles or conference title? No, but it sure as hell doesn't hurt. Right. You just don't need that discord. You don't need certain money men in Trev's ear about not liking Rule for whatever reason because of information they're getting from T.O. It's an influence thing. He just has massive outsized influence. Right or wrong, I think he actually does a pretty good job too of not wielding it to how he could. He realizes whatever the hell he says is not going to be taken with a grain of salt. It's going to be taken really seriously. So he tries to stay out of it a little bit, but he also knows he has to be present.
I mean, like, whenever you think about that, like, the influence, like, the influence of the state of Nebraska, Tia was one of the reasons that it's taken so long to get gambling legalized in Nebraska, and then also the marijuana factor. Like, the dude's still got pull in Nebraska.
Yeah. Juice is what it's called, fellas. And
see, and this is what Rule, and really what Rule's trying to do is to help Tia understand how much marijuana would help recruiting. And so it's all part of the plan. There's a strategy for all of
Mark Kranach, fellas.
He's going against Prime, right? What do you think Prime's doing? Prime's like, it's legal. I'm Colorado. You're good.
What is, you know, what is
Matt's over here? He's like, we're going to Sunday school. Like, it's hard.
What is Prime's stance on weed? I mean, Dion didn't ever seem to be like a drug guy to me.
That's a great question.
Dion was a chicks and gold guy. I mean, he's
got sunglasses on inside a lot.
Well, I'm still 95% sure that if you're in a legalized state, the NCAA still tests you for marijuana, like, while you're in the program. So
you're still, just because you can go buy it on the street corner in Boulder, or you can go down to Lodo and get a handful of purple haze, doesn't mean you can still do it and not get hammered for it. And miss a season.
That was oddly specific. You go down to 8th and Cass and get a handful of purple haze, THC content 12.6%, just as an example. Wow. Yeah.
Not in this household. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you're a hardworking Nebraskan that doesn't ascribe to those values, you know?
Oh, it's just not legal, and I don't want to get tangled up. If it ever becomes legal, who's to say I may not split a brownie with my dear great grandmother because her knee hurts. All right. Not to get political for a moment, but
Brandon, do we need THC legal in order for Nebraska to be back?
Wow.
It's the ultimate question.
There it is.
It's really the question.
While we're at it, can we get a sports kiosk in one of our favorite bars so we can put an in-game bet on whether or not this field goal goes wide left?
Guys, it's so much more fun being online on a Saturday morning. Look at what we can get into. It's great.
I do not think that's a prerequisite for Nebraska to be back, though I don't think it is an impediment. Let's put it that way.
There you go. Like T.O. Look at that. T.O. and THC.
That's fun.
Title. We got a title for the day right there.
T.O. and THC. There you go.
That works.
Let's go ahead and associate him with that.
Vogues, let's get into a couple of thoughts here. I know Coach Satterfield talked this week, and he hit on some of the goals for the spring, one to take care of the football. The other part I want to get your take on is what he said, scheme-fitting personnel with his pro style and more so not having to have personnel fit scheme. What is your philosophy? Here's my system, fit to it, or, all right, this is what we got, let's go with it. I'm curious, and I've seen it work both ways. I think he had a good mesh with what Sean Watson recruited in Bo's first year with Joe Gans, with what they ran offensively. It was more pro style, where you had double tight ends, you had Halu, you had a blossoming defense, and you had a really good offense in 08. So I thought that was a perfect mesh, but it's not always been the case with what's been left over and who's come in every 5 years.
Yeah. I think you've got to have your base principles, both offensively and defensively, of like, this is what we're going to do. Here's why I think it's the way to do it. And, you know, that's all like high level football stuff, but a lot of college football right now is finding players and knowing enough to just get them the ball. So you've got to have some guys that can just win. Trey Palmer was a guy who could just win last year for Nebraska. I think they've got some good options for that in the running back room. Now we saw, you know, with Grant in particular, the guy was working really hard for his 3 to 4 yard runs. So he needs some help. But and this coaching staff, it's been, you know, kind of refreshing to hear them talk about this topic specifically. I mean, I think Rule said it a couple of weeks ago, like a lot of the spring is going to be like identifying like, OK, that's our guy and that's our guy. You know, not talking about that playing favorites. I'm just talking about playing your best players and getting them the football. So I think adapting to your personnel in that way is, you see it at a lot of places in college football today that are having success. And if Nebraska is able to join those ranks, that's one of those items that feels like a little bit of a shortcut to getting back on the right track. If they were ever to go really positive in turnovers one of these seasons, which I think you guys probably know, I think is a pretty random thing that you can't totally control. That's the ultimate shortcut to having a special season come out of nowhere. So we'll see where that goes. Though, if I'm remembering correctly, Satterfield's offenses were pretty high giveaway. Again, it's one of those things where this should be fairly random. The last 15, almost 20 years of Nebraska football, refute that a little bit, and where does South Carolina fit? Because their two seasons were pretty turnover prone. But I think the days of, you know, late 70s after Oklahoma and Texas, or early 70s, debut the wishbone, you know, it takes over college football. Alabama installs that in the summer and runs the wishbone like that following season. Like, we're not talking about that level of switching year to year. I just don't think that can happen anymore. But if Nebraska can identify its playmakers and consistently get them to football in places where it can have success, which all sounds like coach speak, but I really do think it is pretty key to having success early on.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a system thing. That makes it probably pretty difficult for you to go back and look and project forward, you know, because the variables are – just so different. As you've looked at him, though, do you see some sort of mode of consistency, or is it truly no? Just kind of wherever he's been, it's morphed and molded just based on kind of the variables they're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to go back and look. You know, his 10 years, they lined up with Rule somewhat, like a little bit sporadically. Like he wasn't the OC at Baylor, but he was on staff there for a year. Temple, he was OC, you know, to start out and then moved on. Like, put it this way, when Satterfield came out in that first press conference and said, "I believe in the huddle," and like banged the podium metaphorically for it in pro style, like, I watched some South Carolina games last year. Like, that was not my, it's not that it wasn't my impression. I just had no real impression whatsoever. So for him to stand up that kind of vociferously for like, "Hey, we're going to huddle," and like his, you know, reasoning for that all seemed justified to me. It was interesting. But so much of college football is like, it's hard to point to a team. Like, you know, Iowa's an exception to a degree. Some of the air raid teams are, but like, it seems like 85% of college football runs just slight variations of kind of the same basic offense for the most part, at least to me, as someone who's not, you know, like the hardcore X's and O's guys. I follow those guys on Twitter because it's super interesting because they can dig into it and be like, "Oh, this is genius for this reason." But for me, kind of with the 10,000 foot view, a lot of college football is copy and repeat. And that's fine if you've got the playmakers and you can get them the ball.
Inside zone, outside zone, zone read, empty. Yeah, I know what you're saying, man. It does look pretty homogenous when you look across it all. Are we at the point, too? I think we've talked about this for a while, and I'm going to equate it to baseball real quick. So, you know, baseball's in the major leagues, they're changing their rules so that you can't do the shift anymore. You know, the bases are closer together. All in all, it's going to favor not just sluggers, not just power hitters anymore. Like, so it'll be the rebirth of the Tony Gwynns and the Ichiros and the, you know, the Vince Colemans even, right? It's just going to... It's going to open up the game a little bit more to more types of players. In football, it feels like everything has gone spread. Everything's gone horizontal. Everything's gone space. Is the college football game sort of primed for having, I think Michigan's kind of done it. Alabama's kind of done it. Is it primed for being like, no. Now bring back physicality. Now do things that are more vertical, more up the gut, more power-based, because defenses aren't necessarily equipped to handle that anymore.
Yeah, I do think as college football has shifted drastically towards basically spread as the de facto offense, anything beyond that and kind of the big, you know, the most notable counterpoint to it is a kind of physical approach. Downhill running attack becomes a little bit of a value proposition. Now, I also think, and I think this is why we see teams like Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan's the best example of late, have some success, is you've got to have a defense that is capable of limiting big plays. And a lot of teams, not a lot, but a good share of teams in the Big Ten really are excellent at that year after year after year. Iowa's probably the prime example there, because if you're gonna use physicality as kind of your wild card of like, hey, we can be more physical than 90% of the teams we play, you still got to worry about, and this happens more in college football than it does in the NFL, you still got to worry about the big play piece of it, because you know what, even if you're playing Kent State last year, had an excellent wide receiver who's at Penn State now. A guy like that can just beat you. Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Nebraska did it against Iowa with Trey Palmer. And Nebraska was, you know, we knew where they were a 3-win team going into that game. But you hit two of those plays in a game like that that's going to be low scoring, like – It flips it, and Iowa was the favorite. Iowa was more physical, should have beaten Nebraska going into that game, but a couple of plays changed it. So You've got to really be able to control that piece of it, I think, to get the maximum value out of kind of a physical base or physical approach. But if you can do that, it gets pretty intriguing.
And Brendan, while we talk about
the sprint option pass, sorry, that's what you do. That's, but real quick, and I'll let you. Sorry, Eli.
You're all good, Mark.
But on that play in particular, I would love to go back and look. I think it was sprint option pass. You know the one where, I mean, Tommy ran it, Jamal Lord even ran it, quite a few people, Crouch ran it, where looks like option, then you stop and pull up. Tight end 40 yards downfield, 6. Like, I wonder what the percentage of that play in particular, in terms of like how many times it was called versus how many times it went for 6. It has to be Nebraska's most successful all-time play. There's no right. So it's even little things like that. Even if you don't have a Trey Palmer, if you've established that run game well enough, you're going to be able to hit a couple of those to Tracy Wistrom or Matt Harrien or Martin Gilman or insert tight end here from wherever, right?
When we finish this segment, I have some Nebraska playbooks on my computer, which have a detailed play breakdown of how often they run it. Like, I'll look in there and see from like 94, 95 and see what the breakdown of that was. I'll shoot you guys a text.
I bet you it's a 40% success rate, at least.
I bet it's over 50.
Yeah,
the sprint option where Gerald Armstrong was wide open, 18 career catches, 10 career touchdowns. One of those you're talking about.
It just gets you off the couch as soon as you see him pull up. You're like, uh oh, here's 6. You know, you stand up. And sure enough, tight end's open by 10 yards, touchdown.
What play action? I mean,
it's still phenomenal to like think to watch those and like look at the footwork involved in like even pulling that play off as the quarterback, but. Anyway, we'll stop talking about stuff Elijah didn't get to see because he had a question.
I've seen these on YouTube videos.
Google Johnny Mitchell, Keith and McCant, 1991. You'll get what we're saying.
See, I watched.
It's short side option, 3rd and 8. Dear God, they're calling it again. Uh-oh, there's Johnny wide open. And it was great.
I watched some full game replays on YouTube back during COVID. So I have a general base of knowledge, though most of this conversation is going over my head. Where I was going to go with this before we went into the intricacies and the beauties of this sprint option pass was that the defensive.
I don't even know if that's the right term.
Neither do I, but. Okay. We'll move on. We're talking about the Iowa defense with physicality, and you're talking about the big play percentage, and I want to get your take on what you're going to be looking for, not only through the spring, but this season with the Husker defense to gauge their success. You talked about turnovers earlier. You've talked about big play percentage. Is there that one big stat that you're looking at, aside from obviously scoring, to determine the success of this Husker defense next year?
Yeah, I think for Nebraska's defense of late, in the past 2 years, like its best foot forward was it did a pretty good job limiting big plays on a percentage basis, which is how I usually look at it. Its issue was the defensive success rates, like how often teams were able to stay on schedule was a little bit high. And I think that's what, you know, those 2021 defense, you know, allowed, I think like 22 points a game. Like if you have a slightly better success rate, you're holding teams under 20 and that's really good. So there's that piece, there's that box, which they haven't really checked of late. There's the big play box, which they have kind of checked. Because it's a year one in a new scheme under a new coaching staff, I think I would look towards if they can keep the big plays down again, their defense is going to give them a shot to win football games. If you get the efficiency piece of it, great. But that almost seems like, you know, calculus. 202 instead of 101. Let's get the 101 first.
Vogues, what's happening with you and Hail Varsity this weekend?
I'm down in Atlanta in a hotel room, as you can maybe tell. I was sent here by Matt Rule to track the movements of certain high-profile recruit in the state. No, that's not true.
It might be. Matt is he's creative.
Women's NIT on Sunday, of course, ramping up with our planning session, really, for spring football. Be there bright and early on Monday. So, and keeping an eye on Huskers at the NCAA championships in wrestling. So a lot happening. March ends up being pretty busy on the sports front.
Quickly, Brandon, do you think it's a good sign for Nebraska that the Riolas are going down visiting Georgia on the same weekend as the NCAA tournament? Because I don't know about you, I wouldn't be able to focus on a visit if March Madness was going on. And frankly, I wouldn't schedule a visit for March Madness weekend. So do you think that's a good sign for Nebraska?
I like it as a theory. I can't say for sure, but I do like the notion of Kirby Smart being like, all right, you want to go see the weight room? Like, no, I think I'm just going to watch these games. This is pretty nice here in the players' lounge.
No, sorry. Purdue's losing to a 16 seed now. I'll be down in an hour.
Coach Smart, I got to watch this upset. My bracket depends on it. I've got Purdue in the Final Four. We'll talk later.
No. Dylan Riley's a smart kid. He wouldn't put Purdue in the Final Four.
No kidding. Dylan, what's your bracket look like so I can copy and say I'm smart? There we go. Bogues, take care, bud. Appreciate you jumping on.
I got it. Hold on. Thanks, guys. Real quick. Bogues, before you go, man, do you need any Atlanta food recommendations? I know you're a food guy. Or do you have it all planned out already? Because my brother lives there, and I was just there recently, and so he sent a whole list of stuff.
Hit me with one here on air, and you can send me the rest.
Okay, well, I'm going to hit you with two. I'm going to hit you with two real quick. So Chattahoochee Food Works, have you been there?
Nope.
Okay, so it's kind of like food hall type place, you know, kind of it's a repurposed warehouse, and it's got awesome coffee shop, so like kind of food hawker vendor type situation. Tons of good options there. That's one. And then this one, I don't know. I have to tell you about this. It's called Das Barbecue, like DAS.
Okay. I've heard of it, but I have not been.
I'm like, is this like German barbecue? What is going on here? You know,
I
don't
effects.
Even. Yeah, I don't know. And apparently it's not sort of like traditional barbecue where it's like, hey, here's our pulled pork. Here's our brisket. Here's our whatever. And here's the sauce that goes on it. Apparently it has a different twist, but my brother swears by it. So I don't know. Just Das right. Barbecue might be worth looking
Thank
up.
Thank you. I will check those out. Next time you're down here, let me know. I'm not far away.
Yeah, man, I will. Oh, and by the way, Chattahoochee Food Works, good for like kids too, because it's like there's a bunch of walkable areas and, you know.
Is there a ball pit?
There is not a ball pit, but they can deal with it. There's like, there's a candy shop. There's a pizza place. So it's good. It's good stuff. There's your Atlanta food recommendations. Brought to you by Currency. Go Currency.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you, folks. That's pretty good. So, sadly, it's going to be a phone conversation with Gary Sharp here momentarily.
I'll get Gary on the line for you guys.
I was going to say.
The Iron Horse has had a good run of video conversations, the stream there.
Yeah, but he has.
I haven't been to Atlanta really except with you, just the airport.
Oh, right. Yeah.
A couple of times we had to fly from Omaha to Atlanta to Indy because that makes sense for travel to Indianapolis for Big Ten Media Days.
Of course. That's Delta. You know, you got to go through that hub. Atlanta's pretty cool, man. I don't mind. I don't know if I'd want to live there necessarily because it's sort of like there's a lot of sprawl.
It's like 8 million.
A lot of traffic.
6 million.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I want to say it's top. God, it's at least top 10 in terms of metro area.
So has Atlanta climbed in? I think it's fair to say it's 4, but how close to breaking through that top 3 is Georgia/Atlanta from a recruiting standpoint? It's always been Florida, Texas, California. Georgia, and then you have Virginia or the Potomac region, and then New Jersey.
It's up there. It has to be up there. And then Louisiana, right? Yeah.
Right. Louisiana. Is Sharpie with us? All right. Yeah. Gary Sharp is with us, the Iron Horse, Hail Varsity Radio Weekend. Sharpie, what's the good word, man? How's your weekend?
Hey, you know what this weekend is? We've got FDU and FAU in the Sweet 16, man. I'm glad that America knew that was going to happen, and we all picked that matchup.
Well, I'm sure you did, knowing your crystal ball abilities. Yeah, wow. We kicked off the show beating the dead horse that is Purdue basketball in the NCAA tournament. How do you view it? Do you view it as a black eye for the league, or is it more of a Purdue thing, or a little bit of both? How did you process last night before we get into spring football?
See, I think when you get to the NCAA tournament, everybody's on their own. You get to the finish line, and it's great to have 8-9 teams. It shows the depth of your conference. But once you get to this time of the year and the matchups are completely different and you're playing teams that you haven't seen before, or, you know, you haven't played anybody in your conference in a couple of months, so you got to, you know, it's somebody new that you got to scout for, and the randomness of March Madness, I think then you're on your own and anything can happen. But, man, that's the way Purdue played last night and kind of Arizona. It's one of those things, the toughest game in the tournament is your first game because you're tight, you're in a new arena, you got new basketballs, you got a new opponent, you don't know how people are going to react. And if you can get past that first game, if you're a favorite, it seems like you settle in. But if you let the team that you're playing as an underdog just hang around and you don't put them away, or you play a style that fuels a comeback, if you play kind of a slow, methodical style like Arizona does or Virginia does or a little bit Purdue, you allow teams to be able to dream and pull off that upset. And great on FDU for doing what they did, because they came out throwing punches and they were pretty confident. Man, that's a Matt Painter thing. He had a team, but you know what? A lot of people didn't expect them to, at least I believe, this is what I've always said, because I didn't like young guards in the tournament and the fact that Zach Edey would be officiated differently and probably defended differently. So I didn't have Purdue going a long way. I had him actually being knocked out in the next round. But the fact that they didn't use the big man at the end of the game and really like the last half of the second half, I think Purdue got tight. They got a little rattled. And as a result, they got upset, and they're joining history. Virginia and Purdue can hang out in the same fraternity where UMBC and FDU are standing on the corner.
Yeah, and we were talking too. This is a year after St. Peter's knocked off Purdue, right? So like, there's got to be something there. And that's the thing too, is like Matt Painter is, man, he's a great coach. If you look across the Big Ten, give me Izzo number one. I put Painter probably two in general. Just overall how he runs the program, just, you know. But man, there is something he is doing where he doesn't get his guys ready. I don't know if he's tight leading into it, but they did not look like they were having fun. They did not look like they had each other's backs. They did not, especially when you compared them to Fairleigh Dickinson, who is celebrating everything with each other, crazy emotional, crazy energetic. And then there's Purdue sort of sleepwalking.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Mark, and using the word tight. It's also, when your best player is not a guy that's going to have the ball in his hands all the time, like as a guard, that makes it a little bit tougher. And, you know, again, that team that plays in the play-in game, look at Arizona State, Pittsburgh, FDU, they get a head start on the tournament. So they've already played a game, so they've got all those nerves out of the way. And especially if they win, they're like, you know what, now we're playing with house money. And history says one of us is going to make it to the round of 32. So you come into that game with some confidence. And again, if you're facing a team that doesn't come out and tiptoes, like UCLA was impressive. UCLA didn't even mess around the other night against Asheville. If you mess around and you let a team hang around, you get the result last night. But that's what makes March Madness great. I mean, it might have ruined all of our brackets, but my gosh, everybody all of a sudden was Googling, where is FDU? Who are these guys? What is going on? What is a paladin? That's why these last two days, are like the greatest thing in American sports back-to-back days on the calendar. We can all like come together as a country, and we all can laugh at our own in the Big Ten. But yeah, it's Matt Painter. I don't know what happens when they get to this time of the year, if all of the sphincter goes, or they just do things they're not normally going to do, like in huddles, out-of-bounds plays, that kind of stuff. But that's something you have to be examined. But I'm with you to finish this. He's one of the better coaches in the Big Ten, just like Tony Bennett is one of the better coaches in college basketball. But there's just something about this time of the year and the style you play that fuels comebacks on the other side.
Gary, quickly, before we get to some Husker football thoughts, I need your take on Creighton getting the win yesterday over NC State there onto the round of 32.
North Carolina State, you know, they were harassed by Creighton's guards. And, I mean, you got the big man, Kalkbrenner, who, you know, Charles Barkley can't pronounce his name correctly, but it is Kalkbrenner. He was dominant, and you knew he'd be dominant. And now they've got that little elephant in the room of Baylor back in 2014. Baylor is not as athletically gifted, but they've got quality guards. That should be a great matchup at 6-10 tomorrow night. But, you know, I got Creighton going to the Sweet 16. I'm not a big fan of Baylor. I thought their defense went south towards the tail end of the year. But they closed out UC Santa Barbara. Creighton closed out North Carolina State. That should be a really, really good game. Keep an eye on today, Kansas-Arkansas. And we talk about coaching. If Bill Self is on the sidelines, he's the best big game coach in college basketball. But in a short turnaround, which you have in the tournament, Eric Musselman is really, really good. And the way Arkansas plays could just cause some havoc for KU before they settle in. That's one of my games to watch, is possibly another number one that can go down. And, of course, Houston playing essentially a road game against Auburn and now in Birmingham.
I did not have enough guts to go with Auburn over Houston, but I did pick Arkansas over Kansas. So, Sharpie, let's talk about Nebraska's personnel on offense as Satterfield and Rhule are trying to sift through that here. They've had winter conditioning. Now spring ball gets going Monday. How do you feel about Nebraska's ability to make progress with what they want to do offensively? Getting the Satterfield scheme, that pro style, adapted to the personnel. Do you like Nebraska's personnel with what Satterfield wants to run or has run successfully at South Carolina and other stops?
I do, and I don't think they're changing the alphabet. You know, I think it's going to be a lot of familiarity to guys and different styles that they've played, either where they came from or a little bit at Nebraska. You know, I think spring football will be a learning curve, but I think the offense should be ahead of the defense, because I think the defense, with installation and trying to get some familiarity with language and how they line up, that could take a little bit. But I'm comfortable on offense. The thing on offense this year is, in spring, is I'm looking who's going to be the number three quarterback. Sims and Thompson are going to be around, and Sims is going to be fully healthy, but that's not really going to take off until the fall. The number three quarterback, playing behind two guys that have never made it through their entire college career healthy, that's going to be a position I'm going to watch, because if you're not in the number three quarterback, you might be leaving. But look at it, running back. Running back might be the strongest and deepest position on the roster. Wide receiver, they have a lot of them, but who's it going to be? And then up front on the offensive line, you know, there's going to be some guys that are not going to be available, but there's going to be a pecking order that will be established. I really think this offense, it'll be a smoother transition than it will on defense, even though some of the better players on this roster, I think, are on that side of the ball. But I'm curious to see how this all works. But I also think, you know, we've gotten kind of an inkling, Marcus Satterfield, earlier in the week. We all clamor for, hey, OC man, just can you adapt to the strengths of the guys that are playing, quarterback named Martinez or the running back named Grant? Can you please do that? I think Satterfield, he has shown that he is open to that, and I think that'll benefit Nebraska initially a lot better than it has in the past.
Few names I want to get into here, Gary. A couple guys that have, at least from the videos that they've been putting out in conditioning, that I believe have really changed their body types. I think Ethan Piper looks a little bit more like a vintage Nebraska offensive lineman. Like, got some muscle definition going on, even though he's 300 plus. You're like, whoa, okay, that dude looks ready to go. And then Nash Hutmacher, too, looks like he's trimmed considerably, and he could, and he needed to. Curious on if you think maybe just the style of conditioning, the style of strength training that they're employing could give a couple of those guys a new lease on life.
Well, I think so, and there's probably going to be four or five other guys as well, Mark. I, when you look at Piper, so when people see the offensive line, and if you're up bright and early at 6 a.m. on Monday when they start practice, that the offensive line, so they're not, it strikes me as there's not as bulky. Like, it's just, you know, we're not mass and we're just going to be these road graders. There are guys that look like they have put on mass, but it's more of an athletic-looking mass, if that makes sense, with an offensive lineman, where they're not going to be able to run block successfully, but also take the next step and get to the second level. And I think that's been the whole goal with offensive linemen. But other guys, you know, it looks they've worked on speed. I had somebody that has been there most of the winter conditioning tell me last week. He said, you know what, we always thought we were fast. Scott always preached, let's get fast guys. But if you look at after the first couple of recruiting classes, Nebraska never really recruited speed. And that became an issue last year. They noticed on the field that a lot of teams were taking advantage of Nebraska's lack of speed on the outside, and they were pinpointing that. This person told me last week, that wait till you see this team. There are some guys that you thought, man, were slow and they ran in molasses, that all of a sudden either they're more confident or their bodies are different and they've worked on speed training. The guys fly up and down the field. Isn't that wild that we never really talked about Frost saying, man, that's a fast team. That Nebraska just runs all over the place. Now we get Rule in here, and that's what everybody wants to talk about is all this speed and how it'll be a benefit to Nebraska.
You know, and I want to switch over to defense and point taken, but in terms of guys that maybe can get a new lease on life, what Noah Pola Gates jumps out to me because in terms of athleticism and in terms of willingness to hit, that has never been a question with that guy. And, you know, in any of the spring games that he's played in, he's been involved in some collisions and he gets there quickly. When he was in the high school all-star game, it was the same deal. I mean, the guy's a headhunter. Kind of reminds me of a bit of a, like a Ricky Thanars type. What I don't know is was it the scheme or his capacity to learn it that has kept him from being a player? Because in terms of physical attributes, I think he's got everything you're looking for.
Yes. I'm going to tend to go the thing that's kept him off the field is just that extra oomph, so to speak, that, you know, he shows in practice that it's above and beyond and he can make plays and that he's dialed in. I think there's probably a run of things that has kept him off the field, but this is a big spring for somebody like that because guys that are a little bit older in the program, they have this last, like, chance to prove themselves. And if they don't, then you're probably thinking, are they one of the 15 or so that are going to be gone? Something to keep an eye on, guys, and I don't have specific names for you, but it'll become pretty clear. There have been a handful of guys that have already left the program during winter conditioning that we will find out this upcoming week when they update Huskers.com or Matt Rhule alludes to it, the guys that are not here. I believe that he is still here. But I think those are guys, some of the older guys in the program that are now redshirt juniors or true juniors that have been here for 3 years, this is a huge spring for them to make an impression on a brand new position coach to try and find their way on the field. I don't know if Noah Pola Gates is that, and that's unfortunate because when he signed with Nebraska, we thought, man, this is a game changer because he was really good in high school. What happened? That's where the development part of the new regime comes in and says, okay, a guy that has been on a milk carton, hey, welcome back. Where you been for 3 years? Maybe that's him. I don't know. I think he has a ways to go.
Now, well, Gary, really fast here. I want to get a question mark if you don't mind, Gear, because you're talking about guys that have left the program, and that really piqued my interest. Is that referring to that rule that we've talked to a couple times this offseason where guys are allowed to remain on scholarship at Nebraska as long as they're not on the football team? It's that loophole that they can remain on academic scholarship, they remain at Nebraska, they don't go into the transfer portal, and they don't count towards the 85-man limit. Is that what we're talking about? Are these guys that we're going to learn as the months go on are going to be entering their names in the transfer portal? Which side of that is this?
I think these guys that are fully out of the program that want to go and it's better for them to go play somewhere else. I mean, I'm not saying anything new. Fedoni actually kind of let the cat out of the bag the other day when he said that there have been guys that have, he quote-unquote quit during winter conditioning. I mean, Nebraska's got to make some moves. They got to make about 15 moves with guys to open up spots on the roster. They don't have to be to 85 until fall camp starts. So there's going to be, there'll be some movement. I don't believe, though, it'll be anybody shocking where you go, oh, man, you know, on the level of Wandale Robinson where you go, whoa, what happened there? Why'd he leave?
Okay, so, yeah, and I guess the thing I wanted to get to as just a follow-up to that, and I bring up Noah Pola Gates individually, but, you know, I don't know his individual situation. I'm not there watching training and don't know his attitude or whatever. But I'm just wondering if we should or could expect that there will be guys like him that just needed a different structure, because maybe they're not as self-regulated, maybe they're not as self-motivated. It appears that Matt Rhule has brought that, where it's like your days are pretty clinically outlined for you. You're eating lunch at this time, you're going to class at this time. So, like, it seems like it forces a little bit more of a straight and narrow approach. I'm just wondering if, because of that, if there are some dudes on the roster that we haven't seen that are really going to benefit from that, because that's ultimately what they need in order to kind of be their best.
Well, and that's you know, I mean, I know where you're going, Mark, and you're very, very observant on that, because doesn't Matt Rhule strike you as a micromanager? And we've all been in businesses where maybe our boss has been a micromanager and we absolutely hate it, but probably where the football program is right now, it's okay to have a guy that's a micromanager. And that's what Rhule is. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. He likes to be involved in every aspect of Nebraska football. And if I'm the guy in charge and my butt's on the line, that's important. But I think there's some guys that, because of that, and the attention to detail and the attention to the process, and you've got to follow that or you're going to be left behind. Those are the guys you're talking about, Mark, that maybe here in spring we all of a sudden go, okay, here he is. Here's the guy that we thought when he came on campus, he all of a sudden has been discovered. Now, here's the other side of that, though. If they don't make improvement in the spring, then it's easy to say it just didn't work out. So it kind of goes both ways. That's why, you know, spring football will be fascinating, and it'll also probably be a true spring football, where spring football to me has always never been about the team development. It has been about individual development. And when you have to cut down your roster and make decisions on, you know, who's going to be the guys you can rely on the fall, I think this is an ideal spring for a new staff where it's all on the individual to see kind of who plays out in the pecking order.
Gary Sharp with us, the Iron Horse Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity, podcast as well, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. Sharpie, we'll get you out on this, and thanks for spending this morning with us talking some ball. We'll go to Husker Baseball and get your reaction from earlier in the week with the Mavs doing damage to Nebraska. Nebraska had been on a nice spurt, 9 out of 10. The Mavs wouldn't go away, wouldn't say die. Kranak's got his bobblehead Mav right now up on screen, just giving
Durango.
You a little visual.
Durango bobblehead, yeah.
Ringo, is that his name?
Durango.
Durango, sorry.
Yeah.
So you had that happen. Nebraska looks to be back in focus, 2-1 and then 17-1 or something like that yesterday. Yep, 17-1. So they need to do work against Nichols. Creighton looms. What did Omaha and Nebraska's results say to you? Is it going to be a season where you'll get an occasional hiccup, or do you think this was the final wake-up call for Nebraska baseball to a team that they should have beaten? And that's no disrespect to UNO. They've got a great program and coaching staff and a lot of local kids that, man, they had a great effort this week.
Yeah, well, you know, one of those local kids, Cam Frederick from Lincoln Southwest, was a big part of Omaha's victory. You know, they didn't have Mike Bovey, who I think is, along with Max Anderson, two in-state guys, the two best players in the state of Nebraska right now playing Division I. Evan Porter's got a really good program, and Omaha gets up for that game. And that's one of those games where, you know, if it's played not midweek and you don't have Garza on a pitch count, probably Nebraska on the mound is fine because Garza is going to pitch a while, and he's been really, really good for you, maybe good enough to be the number three starter on a weekend in the Big Ten. It's the FAFO principle. You mess around, you boot the ball around, you're not able to take advantage of your opportunities, you're not able to throw strikes, and you have a team that's a big deal for Omaha to play Nebraska, and they've won three of the last four. Those results happen. Disappointed that Nebraska was able to throw strikes, but that's also a little bit on Omaha. Omaha came in, you got the bases loaded on the bottom of the eighth, you got 2-3-4 up, and there's three straight strikeouts. So you can't let that result, which kind of looked like a game in San Diego after you'd won 9 of 10, you can't let that result beat you the next time out. And Nebraska yesterday in Manhattan showed that. So I'm okay 5 weeks into the college baseball season. Buy some stock in Nebraska competing for the top of the Big Ten with Maryland and Iowa, because I think they will establish a good weekend rotation that they'll be able to win in the Big Ten. I'm not saying they're an NCAA team, but I think they're going to be they're not the fifth best team in the Big Ten. They're better than the fifth best team. But that's a learning experience that every game matters when you only play 56. I wonder with the weather if Nebraska is going to get to 56, because I think if they're thinking about the NCAA, guys, don't you think you have to get 36, 37, 38, maybe even 39 wins to be attracted to the committee out of the Big Ten?
Yeah, probably. You got to finish in that upper end, and especially if you're talking about hosting, then yeah, you, probably 40s or cutoff. And I don't think
and I say a big number because your RPI is going to be really low because of your non-con and the Big Ten. And if you look at the bottom of the Big Ten, and thank God Nebraska plays Minnesota and Northwestern, the bottom of the Big Ten, not so good. The top of the Big Ten is going to be really competitive.
Yeah, you got Iowa up there. You got Purdue up there. Purdue plays a little bit of a different style where they're kind of like they're the small ball, steel kind of team. You got Maryland up there. Iowa's got the good top-end pitching. But, Gary, at this point, you have to say that Nebraska's offense is among the tops. I think it sounds weird, but I think among the tops nationwide. Yeah, just by this point, you've had enough games. You knocked off, a top 10 program earlier this year in Vandy. You're putting up run. I mean, they're batting. They're up to 335. You know, like that is an improvement. That is like a 80-point improvement that they made offensively. I don't know what's different, but my goodness, you can't ignore it. You can't say this is a. I'm going to call my shots right here. They're not finishing below 300 as a team this year.
And you know, they still strike out a little bit too much for my liking, but they're barreling up more balls. And remember, Englund is out of the lineup as well. Bumper stickers and the T-shirts are in production, the Corn Crushers. So any help I can get on that, I would appreciate that.
You're making that a thing, man. Let's look at Josh Caron alone, right? The dude was below the Mendoza line last year. Now he's crushing and he's taken the catching job from Griffin Everett. They're an impressive bunch offensively right now. And you now got the two – you got your two staples, right? You got on the weekend rotation, Olsen and Kaminska. Take them to the bank. Like, you're good. You're going to get five innings out of those guys. You got to find that third one, though. I'm not sure Caleb Clark's ready.
Yeah, I think you slide Caleb Clark into midweek, and I think it's either Garza or Brockett to pitch on Sunday. But that lineup, 1 through 9, that's a pretty strong lineup. Another thing, remember last weekend, the top four in the lineup wore the collar, but yet Nebraska put up a big crooked number. So that lineup, 1 through 9, can be a problem. And again, you don't have Englund's bat in the lineup. They're hitting the ball. There's a lot of things to like about Nebraska baseball. Everybody has a hiccup. You know, you play 56 games, you have that one-off night, you just don't let it affect you. And, of course, Nebraska yesterday, 2-1, as Schmitty referenced, and then blew them out 17-1. Mm-hmm. So they're fine. It's hard to believe that we are now, next weekend, is a conference weekend. I mean, Illinois is in Lincoln next weekend. I know the weather has been crappy, but, geez, this college baseball season is flying.
Sharpie Brennan, our dear friend in the Black Hills, is making a little roadie for a wager to Wyoming. The Sharpie lock of the weekend is who? I know you mentioned KU, Arkansas -4, Tennessee, Duke -3.5, Auburn -5, Texas -5.5, Kentucky -2 over K-State, Baylor 1 -1.5 over Creighton. Indiana -1.5, Miami, and then that's a little bit tomorrow, TCU, Gonzaga -4.5, Zags. Just a little friendly advice for your friend Brennan and in the Black Hills.
Take Arkansas.
Money line or to cover the spread?
Cover the spread.
Okay. I can respect that. Because Brennan messaged me last night. Apparently, he was riding the Fairleigh Dickinson money line last night.
Oh, no.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
What? Of course. Then he needs to. Where is he buying that second home at?
It's in Wyoming. It's by the train station.
Yeah. Well, I'm over. I'm actually will be at the Kansas Arkansas game today. So I will have my mobile gambling site up while I'm watching the game.
Good enough, Sharpie. Man. Enjoy your time this weekend, bud. Thanks for a few minutes.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gary. Hey, so he brought up Jackson Brockett, by the way. He's gone 10 innings so far this year. He's only given up 4 hits.
I know.
Across 10 innings. Good. So good chance for him. The other thing I want to point out is defensively, on the year, Nebraska has 10 errors. 6 of them are Bryce Matthews. So, like, the rest of the team, and he, you know, he's shortstop, so he's gonna have the tougher plays to make anyways. But you talk about, I mean, that's a really good defensive effort that Nebraska's putting up, too. I mean, we look at the entire roster, there's only 5 guys that have committed an error and nobody more than one. outside of Matthews, who's done, he's committed six. But there's a lot of dudes that play a lot of ball that haven't committed a single.
But Bryce Matthews, to his credit, is batting .397 on the year, a .500 on base percentage. And if you're into the advanced stats, his on base plus slugging, .1230, second on the team only to Max Anderson, who is batting .435 on the year, .500 on base percentage, and a .1239 OPS. So if you're into the advanced stats, Nebraska's batting right now, especially Bryce Matthews and Max Anderson, is just out of this world right now.
Yeah, and he leads you with five home runs. You got to play Bryce Matthews. I wasn't criticizing him. I'm just saying it's funny that, like, the team is playing stellar defense. He's the one outlier there, but obviously makes up for it at the plate.
Greinach, have yourself a weekend, brother. We'll check in next week after the first round of spring ball, all right?
Let's roll. All right, man. Good seeing you.
Appreciate you. Thanks for tuning in this morning, Elijah. Thanks for hanging out. Appreciate everyone checking out. Hail Varsity Weekend. We're presented by Currency for all your equipment financing needs. Podcast this thing, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play. Tell your friends. Can always watch the Hail Varsity YouTube channel or give us a follow on the Hail Varsity Radio handle at HVarsity Radio. Have a good weekend. Enjoy hoops. We'll talk to you on Monday at 4 with Hail Varsity.